Hi Razor community, and thanks for joining us for another episode of the Razor Sharp Show, where we all hang out to stay sharp. We are your hosts, Ray Milodoni and Matt Romania. Matt, can you share why our podcast exists?
Our podcast exists to educate, inspire, and motivate you to help you reach your goals and make a positive impact in the world.
That's right. And we just love making our podcast every week and want to thank you, our listeners, for all the ongoing support you have shown. If this is your first time listening, well, welcome to the Razor community.
So if you want to move the needle forward and get closer to your goals, stick around as you're going to enjoy this.
Are you prepared to grow your business today? Stay tuned for what's about to occur. This is the Razor Sharp Show with your host, Ray Milodoni. Stay tuned as Ray invites business owners and entrepreneurs onto the show from all over the world to discuss how they are owning this economy and how you can as well. Are you ready to sharpen your saw? Here's your host, Ray Milodoni.
Hi, Emily, and welcome to the Razor Sharp Show.
Thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
One of my fellow multi-potentialites. And I know the Razor community might not be familiar with that word, so share a little bit about what you do and what multi-potentialite means.
Sure. So a multi-potentialite is someone with many interests and creative pursuits. It basically means that you're curious about a number of unrelated subjects. And so as you can imagine, I do a lot of different things. Right now, I'm doing some writing and some speaking and running an online community, and I run some workshops and do various things, and then some like non-work related stuff like play music and hike and whatever. And then over the course of my life, I mean, there's just so much that I could get into, but I'm not going to tell my life story. But I'm interested in a lot of different things. And most of my work revolves around helping to support other multi-potentialites. I believe that you don't have to choose one thing and deny all of your other passions. You can find ways of integrating your many interests into your life. And you don't have to kind of sacrifice financial stability for diversity and exploration or vice versa. So
yeah, I love that. I know when I first discovered your TED Talk that I was kind of like, it was my aha moment going, that's what I am. As weird as it sounds, it was just like that aha moment. And I remember I was in an employment situation and I called a few people in and we sat there and we watched it. I actually ran it as a little bit of a like an inspirational hour, and we kind of used to watch TED Talks, and yours was like one of the first few that I played for the group. And everyone was like, oh, that's what I am. And everyone's like, I just found out that I've got meaning and that I don't have to focus on one thing and be, you know, super deep in one passion and things like that. So it definitely, I saw everyone kind of just get that realization. So Razor community, if you haven't seen the TED Talk, there will be a link in the show note. It's had 3.9 million views, which is just crazy. I'd say it's definitely gone viral.
Yeah, it's been a little intense, but awesome. And I get that response from people who, you know, people are like, oh, I thought I was just weird, but now I know I'm a multi-potentialite.
Yeah, love it. And so where did the word come from? Did you coin it? Is it something that's been around for a while? And what is it like? How did you get to that word?
Yeah, so multipotentiality is a word in psychology used to refer to people who display aptitudes across multiple disciplines. So it's kind of a play on that word. Back in, I think, 2010, like a few months after I launched Putty Like, my site, I wrote a free manifesto PDF, you know, like some people like to do. And I talked about multipotentiality, and another blogger reviewed my manifesto, and he referred to us as multipotentialites. And I was like, hey buddy, can I run with that? And he was like, sure, go for it. So
and the rest is history.
Yeah.
Perfect. And I know, like, for myself, even I've really struggled. Like, I guess as an entrepreneur and someone who, you know, has maybe, you know, chased a lot of different shiny objects and different, you know, passions and my career life has jumped from very random different things that are not connected in any way, mm-hmm. but I've really enjoyed every single one. And I know there's a lot of advice out there that kind of says, you know, focus on one thing and just become like a master at it. Mm-hmm. Like, how do you overcome that? Because sometimes that kind of logically makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. How do you kind of rewire your brain to go against that when it's such a common bit of advice that people give?
Yeah, I think that there's this false dichotomy where we think that you can either be really, really, really good at one thing, or you're just kind of crappy at like everything. Like if you try and do everything, it's the whole jack of all trades, master of none yep. idea. Yep. But the truth is a lot more nuanced. I think that it's actually very possible to be very good at several things. And I mean, like, what does that say of what we think of the human spirit, that like you can only be really good at one thing? And it doesn't sync up with my experience and what I've observed. I see a lot of people out there who are very good at several things and do amazing work and contribute and are really effective. So I think it's just about like maybe looking around and seeing that, you know, there are actually a lot of people out there who do several things really well and are, you know, maybe jump around from project to project and do cool things in different fields, or maybe wear multiple hats at one time. But people are doing it. People are doing it successfully. And so I think that, like, logic or, like, conceptually, we're like, oh, yeah, of course it makes sense to focus all of our efforts in one thing. But for a multi-potentialite, that might not be the best approach. Maybe that'll actually lead to boredom and burnout and we won't be doing our best work.
Yeah, 100% agree. I felt like you were reading my resume a little bit where you know, jumping around and definitely, you know, I mean, I find myself in that position all the time. And it's like, I feel like I am pretty good at a lot of different mm-hmm. things. And, you know, up until finding your TED talk, it was a bit of a, you know, scratching my head, kind of really trying to work out my why and my purpose. And then kind of going, you know, oh, it's given me permission to kind of go, well, you can be an entrepreneur and you can be a farmer mm-hmm. and you can be, you know, into welding and creating sculptures and you can be a podcast host and do all these, you know, weird things that are not connected yet, but really be, you know, really good at all of them and very passionate about it, you know. So I definitely, you know, can kind of talk from experience from that.
Yeah, and I think that this idea that we need to focus on one thing is really a cultural norm. It's, you know, it's something that I talk about this in my TED talk, but it's something we hear when we're very young, like, what do you want to be when you grow up, with the implication that you need to answer with one thing. Yeah. You know, we're encouraged to specialize in school. And so we just kind of grow up with this idea of, like, the one true calling. Like, that's just how things are. Everyone's got one thing they're meant to do with their life. And I think that's very cultural and it's very historical also. It kind of, you can link it back to the Industrial Revolution, where specialization, hyper-specialization was how, that's how our industry flourished. You know, everyone did one thing really well. Yeah. But there's nothing like inherent or like biological or whatever about like doing one thing. So maybe realizing that can help as well.
Yeah, that's a really valid, you know, strong point in regards to that, you know, the Industrial Revolution needed to have people that just put that mm-hmm. one button on that, you know, that bolt mm-hmm. or something, you know, so it created to focus and go just really simple to task base, as opposed to, you know, building the whole car from scratch. And yeah, so that's really a good point. And maybe, you know, we just accidentally been pushed into this environment that's what you need to do. So let's get to know you a little bit better, Emily. How did you make your first dollar?
Oh, how did I make my first dollar? Like, do you mean like in my life?
Anywhere. It could be a lemonade stand. It could be your first
dollar. Oh, geez. When I was 14, I worked at a bead shop. Cool. My mom's friend owned the bead shop and she gave me a job that lasted like a few weeks. So maybe it was that.
Awesome. And I guess because you run the community and you have your own website, puttylike.com and so forth, like, so did you always know that you were kind of wired to do your own thing and run your own kind of business or many businesses?
Well, I didn't have any entrepreneurs in my life growing up, so I don't think I even really thought that was... I hadn't considered it until I was in my mid-20s, really. But I've always been very independent. I've always had a lot of projects, and I think I was an entrepreneur without realizing it. Like, I did freelance web design throughout school, and I played in a band when I was younger, and I used to, like, you know, book our shows and deal with all the kind of management stuff. And I'm definitely, like, I don't like being told what to do, and I'm pretty independent, and I've always had projects. Sometimes they've just been, like, creative projects, art projects, things like that. But I think that kind of matches up really well with the entrepreneurial mindset. And so it was a pretty natural fit for me.
Yeah, awesome. And is there been a book or audiobook that you've read or listened to that has changed your life and why?
You mean in terms of, like, leading me towards entrepreneurship?
Or anything. Or just a book that's really impacted you. It could be anything. Sometimes it could, you know, people say Harry Potter.
Yeah. So. I mean, this is going to be totally unoriginal, but when I read The 4-Hour Work Week when I was just, like, at the beginning of this journey towards, you know, starting my site. And that was hugely inspiring, as it is for, I think, many people. I also really enjoyed Amanda Palmer's book, The Art of Asking.
Yep.
And found that really inspiring, not in quite such a direct way. Like, I feel like The 4-Hour Work Week led me down the path to create Putty Like and kind of, you know, think differently about my career. But The Art of Asking impacted me in I think more subtle ways. And I don't know if I can articulate it exactly, but I found it a very touching and inspiring and smart book, and I recommend it to everyone that I can recommend it to.
Awesome, great. Well, the links will be in the show notes, as everyone listening to the podcast will always know. And Emily, has there been a time where you've just kind of made a really small change in either your business or your personal life that has had a really big positive outcome?
Yeah, okay. So recently, you know how everyone's got, like, opt-in bribes, right? Like, you submit your email address and you get this free PDF or whatever. So I switched mine up, and I created a quiz. And because several people have been asking me, like, is there a quiz that I can take to learn if I'm a multi-potentialite? And for a while I was like, oh, it just seems so silly, whatever. But I was finally like, okay, I'll make a quiz. I'll try and make it somewhat intelligent. And so it isn't just, like, a dumb internet quiz and people actually get something out of it. And I put that up, and, like, my opt-in rates, like, doubled. It was, wow. I was kind of shocked. I was like, really? Really? Like, I guess people really like quizzes. Yeah. So that's a small thing where I'm like, oh, I should have done that years ago.
Love it, love it. That is a great tip. Raise a community. Go change your opt-in. Stop giving away ebooks and build a quiz. Love it, love it. Now, I know, so basically you have recently launched a book, which is extremely exciting, and you're in the process of launching that now. And it's a guide for those who still don't know what they want to be when they grow up. And it's called How to Be Everything. How did this book unfold, and share with the Razor community? Like, what can they get out of reading or listening to this amazing book that you've created?
Sure. So I've been blogging about multipotentiality since 2010, and I realized a few years in that there was a real lack of resources specifically about, like, how to make a living, how to make it work financially. You know, we have a handful of books about this phenomenon, about people with many passions, but none of them really goes very deep into the money side of things. And then there are, like, all of these career planning guides that the typical approach is, like, let's take a test and assess our aptitudes and figure out our passions and narrow it down to that one perfect fit. And that approach obviously doesn't work very well for most multipotentialites. So I felt like I really wanted to explore how we make a living, how we build our careers. So what I did for the book, my methodology was that I interviewed about 50 multipotentialites who self-described as being both happy and financially comfortable. And then I sent out a couple surveys, and I got a few thousand replies to those. So I had quite a bit of data that I was working with. And I really wanted to understand, like, how we structure our careers, how we make a living, how we're successful. And it was actually really frustrating at first. As I was doing these interviews, I realized, like, I'm meeting people who have all different careers, and like what works for one person doesn't work for the next. And, you know, I'll think like, oh, this is a very specialized career. And then I'll meet someone who's doing that, but like has a bunch of different hobbies on the side, and, you know, and or someone who like has a career that I've never even heard of. And I was like, okay, well, how do I pull out some lessons and some commonalities? And what I was able to do was I realized that there are these four work models that people were using, like these, and then sometimes people were hybrids and kind of moved between them. But I definitely noticed that there were these four different ways that people were making a living. There's the group hug approach, which is where people were combining their many passions and interests into one multifaceted job or business, you know, something where they get to wear a lot of different hats. Then there's the slash approach, which is where they have several separate and distinct revenue streams. So this is someone who like has, you know, someone who's like a programmer slash teacher slash stand-up comedian slash writer, right?
Yep.
And then you've got I call it the Einstein approach, because Albert Einstein worked at the patent office for many years. He was basically employed by the government, so he had this very stable, secure day job. And then he developed his theories on the side. So this is when you have a day job that you enjoy well enough, but it maybe isn't the end all and be all. You know, you aren't integrating all of your passions into it, but it takes care of your financial needs and it allows you to explore your other passions pressure free on the side. And of course, the key here is your good enough job it needs to leave you with enough free time and energy to explore all of those other things. So it can't be like overly draining, but this work model works really nicely for some people. And then there's the Phoenix approach, which is where you dive into a field for a longer period of time, for a number of years often, and then you kind of develop interest in something else on the side, and you kind of feel like, okay, I've got what I came for in this area, I'm ready for a new adventure, and you transition and you build a new career in a new field. So I kept seeing these four commonly used work models throughout these interviews, and so that's kind of what I based the book around. Each work model has a chapter with lots of case studies and examples and lessons and exercises to kind of help you conceptualize what that might look like with your specific passions and skills.
Love that. I think I've been in every single group throughout my life. Just thinking back of my career, and I'm like, yeah, I'm a group hugger. No, I'm an Einstein. Yeah. No, I'm a Phoenix. You know, I do the slash version. You know, I kind of feel like I've visited all those quadrants.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. You can totally be a hybrid. You can do one for a year and switch to another work model. I never like to tell my multi-potentialite readers to pick one thing. So just like always like to stress that you can totally customize these. But yeah, and then there's other stuff in the book too about there's a pretty lengthy chapter on multi-potentialite friendly productivity strategies. So like how to focus on many projects and make progress on them at the same time. How to choose what to focus on, when to leave something behind and move on to something else. And then there's also a chapter on like the emotional side of things and the common insecurities that we deal with, like the fear of not being the best, or like how to introduce yourself, or guilt and shame when you kind of lose interest in something and move on. So it's kind of like a comprehensive guide for the multi-potentialite with like an emphasis on work and career.
Love that. And you touched on something there where I know I've been stuck in that in that situation, is when people say, oh, what do you do? And I'm just like, which hat am I going to share that's going to give the best value for this conversation?
Right.
You know, today am I a farmer, or am I the corporate, or am I the podcaster? Or, you know, I definitely know when people ask, what do you do? It's just not a simple question to answer anymore for me.
Yeah. It definitely depends on the context and who's asking.
Yeah, absolutely. Where I am and what I think that they want me to be, you know, so.
Right.
It's great. So what, you know, I guess sometimes for me, it's always been like, I know the word, and like one of the first things I did was went and changed my blog to like my multi-potentialite story. You know, like I kind of embraced the word and really enjoyed, you know, kind of calling myself a multi-potentialite. But I guess sometimes people might go, well, how do I know that, like, what's the first sign that people might think that they could be calling themselves a multi-potentialite or find comfort in what you share?
Yeah, I mean, I think that if you hear about this stuff and you find yourself like nodding along and you're like, oh yeah, that's me, then there's a really good chance that you're a multi-potentialite. I don't, like, the point of my work, and I, is not to like separate people into specialists and multi-potentialists. I don't think that's very helpful.
No.
I think it's more about like, I don't know, if the label like resonates for you, if it feels like a good fit, use it. If not, that's okay. Some people, there are other terms out there, like some people like polymath or renaissance person or generalist, and like that's totally fine. And some people don't like using any label at all. Other people find it really empowering. So, you know, whatever works for you,
yeah,
really. But like the point of my work, like I said, isn't to like separate people out. It's more to just make people aware that this is a thing, that there's nothing wrong with multi-potentialites, that we actually can, we often do really amazing work, we have strengths and superpowers, and to help provide some resources for us, because I think that we're really lacking in resources.
Yeah, love that, love that. And I completely agree. I love the word and I embraced it and ran with it, but, you know, find whatever works for you. But, yeah, it's definitely a great, great word. And I know that, you know, whoever I've shared it with has kind of gone, yes, this is exactly what I've been looking for, because there's so much advice out there that goes against, you know, being that bit of a generalist or, you know, having many hobbies. And I think it's just nice to finally hear something from a different angle that makes a lot of sense. You know, that's, you know, kind of when I was nodding across the whole TED Talk and I saw everyone else in the room going, that's what I am. You know, it's after 20, I had, you know, people in the room that were 40 years old and they just now discovered that they can be doing many different things, you know, so it's good. So what was it like being on the TED stage? You know, like obviously it's a dream for a lot of people and you've been there, done that, and you know, share with the Raise community, what's it like?
Yeah, so it was a TEDx event first, and it was cool. I mean, it was terrifying, but I knew it was going to be terrifying. So I feel like I prepared, maybe definitely over-prepared.
Yeah.
Because I knew I was going to be just so, so nervous. And I was like, I just need to have the words, like, down. And I had the whole thing memorized. I was practicing it, like, three times, running through it about three times a day for, like, the, you know, month leading up to it. So wow. I had all the words down, and I just needed to worry about, like, my nerves, basically. Because I knew that that was what was going to mess me up. Yeah, it was really cool experience. I just like, you know, there are very few things where you can identify ahead of time that they could have a huge impact on both your career and like getting your message out to the world and helping people. And I was like, if I do a good job at this TEDx event, then, you know, TED.com could feature it and then it could go viral and then like, it could change everything. So I can't think too much about that because then I'll be totally paralyzed, you know, because of all the pressure. But like, I need to really do a good job on this. And so I really took it seriously and worked really hard on it. And it felt really good to, I really like doing that. I've noticed this about myself. I like kind of learning about a field, diving in and like working really hard at a project. And then once I like execute and I do a great job and I feel really proud of myself, I don't feel the need to do it again. I'm like, okay, ready for like a next field, my next adventure in a new field, you know. But I've just noticed that about like my multi-potentialite patterns or whatever. But yeah, it was great. It was a really cool experience.
Yeah, that's awesome. And well, how long was it between your TEDx until you then, because you have to redo it for TED, like is that how it works? It's
So you do your TEDx and then the TEDx YouTube channel posts all of them. And then TED.com sometimes, I think they feature like 1%. So like if you're getting a lot of traction or somehow people get wind of it over at TED, then they'll just feature it and they'll put it on their website. So I didn't actually speak on like the big TED stage, which happens like I think once a year and costs thousands of dollars to go and is like really big deal, but it got featured on TED.com.
Well, that's great. I think it's fantastic. And I'm very glad that I've come across it and had the ability to kind of just explore what this all kind of means for me. And, you know, I've been, you know, cause it's been out for about 2 years now. No. A year and a half. Yeah. So
yeah.
Yeah, I must have been one of the early discoverers of it because, yeah, I know that it's been part of my life for a while now. It just feels so natural, to be honest, so.
Oh, thank you. No That's worries. Awesome.
Well done. And so let's jump into the Raise Around.
Oh, boy.
You ready?
This is where I should have checked out the questions you sent me beforehand.
All good, all good. So okay. Who's someone who's been a mentor for you?
Someone who's been a mentor for me. There are two teachers that I've had throughout my life that really had an impact on my life. Let me see. There's one that I write about in How to Be Everything in the conclusion, who in law school, she taught me. This was like my first introduction to entrepreneurship. I took this really weird music policy class, which was very atypical for law school, but it was like an interdisciplinary class with law students, business students, art students, and music students. And we had to come up with a business plan for a business that challenge the mainstream music industry. And so it was like this awesome project, and we came up with this cool idea, and then we decided to take our idea and pitch it to the university-wide entrepreneurial competition or whatever. And we were preparing our talk, and we rehearsed it for my teacher, and she was like, you know, your idea is weird. Don't hide that. Feature it.
Yeah, right.
And because she's like, it's going to be different from everything else that the judges are seeing. Like, don't try and hide that, you know? And I was like, damn, that's really good advice for life. Like, don't hide the things that make you weird or unique. Like, feature them. There might be your competitive advantage or whatever. So I thought that was that's like a bit of advice that I try and bring to everything that I do now.
I love that. I think that's a great, great thing. And Razor Community, I think it's something that you just kind of need to stop and reflect on, that is that, you know, if you are doing something different and weird, use that as your draw card to stand out and kind of amplify that as your trait, because I think that's, you know, we live in busy societies these days and you need something that makes you stand out and be different, because, being the same doesn't kind of always make you stand out.
Yeah, and I think that especially for multi-potential, it's like often the key to standing out is integrating your other interests into whatever you're doing. Like, you know, like if you're like a business coach, you know, can you like bring in, are you also like a musician? Maybe you're like the rock star business coach and that's like part of your brand and you're like, I don't know.
Yeah, I love that. It's funny because that's great. I work with a company which is called Rockstar Empires, and funnily enough, you probably didn't even know that. That's what we do is we help people, you know, express their rock star, their inner rock star. It doesn't matter what they do, you know, so that's quite funny you said that. So what's something that you know now that you kind of wish you knew 5 years ago?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like the whole journey is so important, and I'm sure I could think of something if I give enough thought, but that's like, okay. It's just been, I don't know, I needed to learn the things that I needed to learn, and maybe the quiz thing, like create a quiz.
Cool, love that.
But
better late than never.
Yeah.
Awesome, awesome. If there's one thing that you could change in the world right now, what would that be?
I guess I would really like it if people would stop being so judgmental of others and stop trying to, like, I wish people could realize that there are multiple ways of doing things, and that, you know, there isn't just the right way. There are like several right ways. And if something works for you, that's great that it works for you, but it might not mean that it's like the way. And I feel like we see this a lot with people giving advice, you know, people being like, I've found the answer, I know how to do the thing, and I'm going to teach you how to do the thing, without realizing, like, sometimes, like, one bit of advice could be perfect for one person and the exact wrong bit of advice for someone else. I don't know if I'm expressing this very well, but...
no, I definitely, because I do a lot of facilitating and presentations, and one thing I need to be mindful is that if there's 20 people in the room, and I always say this, is that there's 20 versions of the truth. Mm-hmm. Like, everyone is interpreting what I say with their own filter and their own life experience. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, that's kind of a bit of valid, you know, point, is that just one bit of advice, just because I think it's great for myself or that I need to share it, it can be interpreted in different ways, and it could actually be really bad advice for someone else. So I think, you know, the fact that there is interpretation with human beings is, I think, a big point. I do an exercise that kind of illustrates how people can interpret the same thing in very different ways. Mm-hmm. So I think that's good.
Yeah. And like you said, just realizing that different people have different backgrounds and different worldviews and different experiences, and that makes a huge difference. And Yeah.
Interpretation filters is what I call it. So.
Yeah, I like that.
Awesome. What's a site that you have to visit daily to survive? You can say Facebook.
Yeah, I don't know. Gmail, it's so lame.
No, that's good. Keeps you productive then.
I don't know that I need it to survive, but it's probably the site that I go to.
Is there an app or something that you use, you know, meditation app or organizing
app? Yeah, I mean, I use Slack with my team, so that's really helpful. I do use the meditation app Headspace. I don't use it every day. I would like to, but yeah. It's a really great one. And then, like, the Putty Tribe. I mean, our like membership site that's a, you know, playoff of Putty. Like, I always love going in there because there's always interesting conversations and it's great people. So maybe I'll go with that.
Yeah, awesome, awesome. And at the Razor Sharp Show, we like to learn things all the time. So what's something that's fresh off the press that you've learned in the last 7 days?
Well, I'm learning about how to make a hiking trail. That's like a new thing for me because we were talking before the call. We just bought some property and we're going to be on 5 acres and most of it is forested. And so I'm kind of learning about how to clear a trail and do all that stuff. I haven't gotten to apply any of these lessons yet because we haven't moved yet, but I'm getting excited about that.
Awesome. Awesome. Have you come across geocaching?
No.
Awesome. Geocaching is like a website or an app that has like hidden treasures around places and you kind of like got to find them with clues, and they're very big in the hiking industry and kind of like when you get to a bushwalk, instead of just walking the common track, you can load up the app and do like a geocache and it's like hidden containers and you write your name and you log that you've been there. I've only recently discovered it, but super fun from what I can see people are doing and getting off the main track and getting, you know, into the real wildlife and exploring new areas, and people do like hidden tracks and stuff, which is really cool. So
that is awesome. I think I have someone mentioned that to me a while ago. It sounds so cool. I was talking to a friend of mine who's an archaeologist, and she typed in our new address into her archaeology database, and she was like, "Oh, you're like right next to a major archaeological site," and there might actually be some like really cool things hidden under the ground that we're not allowed to dig up.
Yeah, wow. Interesting. Yeah, cool. Love it, love it. And so how do you stay productive? Like, what's your favorite productivity hack?
I like to work in short spurts. Like, I'll work for like a couple hours and then go for a hike. That's like a new thing for me since moving up to the island, just kind of balancing out like intense work with nature and exercise. That sounds so lame. It's not really exercise, it's like just moving in nature.
Yeah, grounding and then, yourself.
Yeah, and then coming back to it, that like going back and forth between like computer stuff and nature has been really, really great for me and like has led to a lot of productivity.
Yeah, awesome. I think that's a really good, you know, I think these days we live in such a world where everything's connected, so digital, and it's really great to just unplug sometimes or do like a bit of a, even if it's only for a few hours or for 20 minutes, a digital detox where you can actually just be present in the moment and appreciate the trees and the birds and the air and the clouds and be very present with that moment as opposed to the notifications popping up on some screen, you know. So
yeah.
I did the weirdest thing the other day. I had a physical photo and I actually went to pinch it to zoom in and I was just like, oh my god, I need to get off, you know, devices for a little bit, you know. It's just, it's become so natural. It's crazy. So how can the Razor community get around the book that you launched and more of what you're basically doing and sharing? Like, what's the best website they can go to?
Yeah, so they can learn about the book at howtobeeverything.com. It's also available at, like, you know, the bookstores and the online retailers and all of that. And then if they want to learn more about what we're doing at Putty Like, and just, you know, there's like hundreds of blog posts about multipotentiality, you can head over to puttylike.com. That's PUTTYLIKE.
Awesome. And those links will be in the show notes. And I really love how you engage the community a lot. I love getting emails from you. I admittedly unsubscribe to a lot of emails. I'm very public about that. But yours are the ones that still come through. Because I just I really generally love the way that you angle things and how you include the community and you share your thoughts, like what's on your mind. And, you know, I feel like, you know, I've kind of been on the journey of you know, coming even to Melbourne, and we've met at a local meetup, and, you know, I wouldn't have known about that if I wasn't following. And, you know, I think it's just really cool how you kind of go about it. I really enjoy your emails. So I really encourage everyone to get on the newsletter, because it is very fascinating, especially when you first kind of discover what multi-potentialites word is all about, and you kind of just want to feel included. And it's great. So keep up the great work on that.
Yeah, thanks. I try and it's a little harder to do when you're like promoting a book or whatever, but I always try and write those newsletters like I'm writing to a friend.
It definitely feels like a conversation, you know, that even though we don't physically in the same room, it, you know, I remember when you asked about, you know, people being, you know, successful at their multi-potential eye, and I didn't know it was going to be part of your book, but, you know, I just saw people comment on the post, and I'm sure you got thousands of replies, and I replied too, and I was like, you know, I don't normally engage with those type of things, but just was like, yeah, I want to share, you know, what I'm up to and how I'm, you know, kind of living the multi-potential eye lifestyle, you know, so...
Awesome.
Yeah, no, it's good, good. Emily, thanks very much for coming on and chatting. I know that the Razor community is going to get so much value, even if it's just them discovering what this word means and they check out the TED Talk and all the value that you've shared with the Razor community. I know they're going to get a lot out of that.
Great. Thank you so much for having me. This was super fun.
Excellent, excellent. Well, Razor community, until next time, stay sharp.